You're listening to the Pre-Hospital Diary Podcasts with your host, Kai.
Hey guys, welcome back to another podcast. I just want to thank everyone for the support lately. It's been really enjoyable creating these again. So today in this podcast, I'll be covering everything about acute coronary syndrome. I'll be touching on atherosclerosis, the different types of angina, risk factors, the pathophys of ACS, a little bit about NSTEMIs and STEMIs, and lastly, the presentation and management of ACS. So once again, I'm going to start with a clinical case to set the tone. So you have been called out to a 64-year-old male complaining of sudden onset central chest pain. The patient states that the pain feels heavy and is going down his left arm. The patient feels nauseated and states it feels like my heart is coming out my chest. On arrival, you find him to be clutching at his chest, stating that he's never experienced anything like this ever before. He has a history of type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and GERD. The patient also smokes around 5 cigarettes a day. What would be your next steps? Alright, so let's get into it. So acute coronary syndrome, or ACS as I will refer to it in this podcast, is an umbrella term that is used for three conditions, and it is known as the ACS triad. So this includes unstable angina, NSTEMI, and STEMI. I am also going to talk a little bit about stable angina, even though it technically doesn't come under ACS. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about atherosclerosis. So atherosclerosis is the main causative factor of ACS. Atherosclerosis is the process of fatty plaques that build up on the walls of our coronary arteries over time. This causes stenosis of the coronary arteries, which leads to less distal blood flow and risk of plaque rupture. There are many causes of atherosclerosis, and these can include smoking, advanced age, so males of 45 plus and females of 55 plus, diabetes, high cholesterol, hypertension, and family history. So this leads on to angina. Angina is the word we use for cardiac chest pain. So angina occurs because of ischemia, and this ischemia is known as demand ischemia. So what happens over time is these atherosclerotic arteries become hardened and narrowed, which we know as stenosis. And due to this stenosis, there is less blood flow distally, which leads to an oxygen demand. And when there's oxygen demand, it means ischemia may occur, leading to angina. So for example, if someone is exercising, there is always an increased demand for oxygen. So these damaged coronary arteries are unable to provide adequate oxygenation and blood flow to these cardiac myocytes, and this leads to ischemia and angina. It is important to know that in angina, these cardiac myocytes still receive some form of blood flow, therefore cell death doesn't occur. So let's talk a little bit about stable angina. So stable angina does not come under the ACS triad, how I thought it was very important to talk about, as it will eventually lead to an acute coronary syndrome. So stable angina occurs because of that luminal stenosis from atherosclerosis, which we covered. And this fatty plaque becomes covered in a fibrous tissue. This is what's known as stable angina. So when it's covered by this fibrous tissue, it's known as a stable plaque. In stable angina, when the demand for oxygen increases, either because of increased heart rate or hypertension, ischemia will occur because of reduced perfusion. So the trademark of stable angina is that ischemia produces chest pain, which is usually on exertion. So, for example, exercise. Stable angina symptoms will dissipate by itself when the demand for oxygen decreases. So, for example, after some exercise, during exercise, you feel some chest pain. And then this patient will usually rest and that pain usually should go away. So now let's move on to Prinz Metals angina. So this is a different type of angina. This is caused by vasoconstrictive spasms of our coronary arteries. This type of angina is not caused by atherosclerosis. So we may see ST changes in this type of angina, however, resolves immediately with GTN treatment. Prinz Metals angina is the most commonly caused by sympathomimetic drugs like cocaine. So now that we have covered stable angina and Prinz Metals angina, we can move on to ACS. As I mentioned in stable angina, the plaque is covered by that fibrous tissue, which enables it to be stable. However, in ACS, this plaque is unstable and prone to rupture. When this plaque ruptures, it causes a cut on the wall of the artery. Now, these plaques are very thrombogenic, so thrombogenic just meaning mass coagulation of blood. So platelets are going to invade this rupture and form a thrombus. This thrombus is either going to partly occlude the vessel or fully occlude the vessel. And as I said before, the narrow lumen is going to cause increased oxygen demand that is unable to be met. Therefore, we get the ischemia, or in ACS, we may even get an infarct. Now let's talk about unstable angina. So unstable angina is when a thrombus from the plaque rupture partly occludes the vessel. This is known as a subtotal occlusion. So in unstable angina, the subendocardial layer of the tissue becomes ischemic. However, no tissue death occurs. Therefore, we may get troponins released. So troponins are a biomarker of heart damage and are only released when heart damage occurs. Now, the characteristics of unstable angina include the symptoms typically starting at rest without a trigger, the symptoms do not go away with rest, and these symptoms may last from 15 to 30 minutes. We may see ST depression or new T-wave inversion on an ECG. Unstable angina and an NSTEMI can only be differentiated by troponins. Therefore, pre-hospitally, we should be treating unstable angina as an NSTEMI. Now, NSTEMIs are known as non-ST elevation myocardial infarctions. Now, you would have noticed the word infarction. This just means tissue death. So in an NSTEMI, the subendocardial layer has become infarcted instead of ischemic, like in our unstable angina. So therefore, in our NSTEMIs, we're going to see that troponin leak. These typically will be in the hundreds. The patient will present with ACS symptoms without ST elevation. Instead, you may see ST depression and T-wave inversion. Now, lastly, and most dangerous is a STEMI. So STEMI basically just means ST elevation myocardial infarction. A STEMI occurs when the thrombus causes a full occlusion of the coronary artery. Therefore, there is no distal blood supply, leading to a major infarction of that tissue. In a STEMI, we will often see troponins in the thousands due to the amount of damage being done. STEMIs are serious and need prompt treatment to minimize the amount of tissue damage being done. In the coming episodes, I will be going over STEMIs in greater detail. I also want to touch on our ECG interpretation of ACS. As I said before, ST elevation will be seen in Prinz Metals angina and a STEMI, and then we will see ST depression or T-wave inversion in unstable angina and an NSTEMI. There are many conditions that may cause these particular ECG changes, so I would like to briefly cover them, as it is important to understand the differential diagnoses for these patients. So let's start off with some conditions that may cause ST elevation. Now, by far the most common is pericarditis. So this will present with global ST elevation and PR segment depression. We can differentiate this from ACS by history taking, as the chest pain will often be pleuritic and positional in nature. The next one is benign early repolarization syndrome. So this is ST elevation that is often seen in the precordial leads. It's usually asymptomatic and presents in younger men. The last one is also exercise-induced ST elevation. So let's move on to some conditions that may cause T-wave inversion. So these include ventricular hypertrophy. So this often presents with a deep S waves and a strain pattern. We can also see it in increased ICP, a pulmonary embolism, or even a bundle branch block. And lastly, ST depression may be seen in metabolic disturbances, especially hypokalemia. It may be seen in ventricular hypertrophies and even bundle branch blocks. So now that we have gone over the ACS triad and ECG interpretation, let's talk a little bit about the presentation of a patient presenting with ACS. So patients will present with chest pain and discomfort. Let's talk a little bit more about this chest pain. So the pain is often severe and sudden. The pain is usually central or left-sided. A patient may describe the pain as heavy, crushing, aching, or tight. The pain is usually non-pleuritic and non-positional. And lastly, this pain may often radiate to the neck, jaw, left arm, or even the epigastric region. A patient may also present with atypical chest pain. Therefore, it is always important to get an ECG on a patient if they're presenting with anything related to this. Other common symptoms include nausea, shortness of breath, skin being clammy, pale, diaphoretic. A patient may also experience palpitations. A patient may also present with isolated epigastric pain. This is common in pregnant women and women in general. So any woman who has epigastric pain should always get an ECG. And lastly, the patient may present with signs of shock and a decreased cardiac output. Now, lastly, I want to talk about the management principles of our ACS patients. In these patients, it is vital to ensure thorough history taking and getting that full medical and medication history. Questioning about the pain is also very important to guide our treatment. In these ACS patients, we always need to be prepared for our rapid deterioration, especially in a STEMI. So being prepared looks like ensuring pads are on, rapid transport, reassessment of vitals, and gaining bilateral IV access. We also need to consider our ACS drugs. So our ACS drugs may include things like aspirin, which is our antiplatelet, GTM, which is our nitrate that reduces stress on the heart. It's always important to consider right ventricular involvement when we're using GTM. Next one is fentanyl. Fentanyl we use to manage their pain, which reduces the workload on the heart. And lastly, heparin, which is our anticoagulant, which prevents any further clots from forming. Now, all of these drugs and management principles are super important. However, the biggest, most vital management principle is reassurance. These patients need to be kept calm and reassured. The more relaxed this patient is, the less workload on the heart. So that's all for today. Hope you guys enjoyed and got a good overview of ACS. It's quite an intense topic with lots to cover. So in the next couple of episodes, I'll most likely be covering STEMIs and NSTEMIs. So that's something to look forward to. So once again, thanks for listening and I'll see you in the next one.